Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Greetings from Long Time No See, the podcast. Every week, we'll be inviting two blindfolded comedians to answer a series of questions about their careers, lives, and opinions. Now, let's remove those blindfolds and start the show.
Hi!
What would your opening line with your celebrity crush be?
Loved you in Harry Potter.
Worst date you've been on?
A man bit my neck mole off once.
You did what?
A man bit my neck mole off.
Oh my God, Jack almost fell off his chair.
Be sure to follow and subscribe to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Spark Parade, a show where I geek out with artists and entertainers about their cultural spark of inspiration. I'm Adam Unz, at Spark Parade on all social media. Thanks so much for joining me. I got a quick little bite-sized bonus episode for you today, featuring my conversation with singer J.W. Francis about his spark, which was Deer Hunter's seminal album, Halcyon Digest. And in the spirit of quick little bite-sized episodes, I think we should just dive straight in. That's my opinion. So let's do it. Quick JW facts. JW Francis is a New York-based musician originally from Oklahoma. Musically, JW takes his lead from the greats of the downtown scene, Patti Smith, The Velvet Underground, Television, Talking Heads, The Strokes, Yeah Yeah Yeahs, etc., and he is fast emerging at the forefront of the next generation of New York greats. His second album, Wonder Kid, was released earlier this year. Quick Halcyon Digest facts. Halcyon Digest is the fifth album by indie rock band Deer Hunter. The album was released in 2010 to universal acclaim, and it became Deer Hunter's most commercially successful album. It was produced by both the band and Ben Allen, who was famously at odds with Deer Hunter's frontman, Bradford Cox, throughout the album's creation. And there you have it. Without further ado, here comes my chat with J.W. Francis about Halcyon Digest. Do you remember hearing this album for the first time or becoming aware of it for the first time?
Oh my God, yes. Of course I remember listening to it for the first time. I torrented it onto my MP3 player, and my family had moved to Paris recently, and I was like angsty about that for some reason. So I would walk around Paris listening to this album, feeling the angst, chemical, come on chemicals. Like just, yeah. You know,
yeah. Hey, were you like a Deer Hunter fan before this, or was it this album that you'd heard about?
God, first? Oh my God! I literally thought we were just talking about Montreal now. Oh my God! Sorry. Okay, Deer Hunter, Halcyon Digest. I was like, oh yeah, Heimel's got a like a Promethean curse or whatever that. Remember that of Montreal album in like 2007?
Uh huh.
Yeah. Okay. That's the rewind. All right. Deer Hunter, Halcyon Digest. Funnily enough, I was a teenager and I torrented it in Paris. And I was, same holds for this album.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But had you been a Deer Hunter fan before?
I had known, I had heard that song Walkabout that he did with Noah Lennox. And mm-hmm. I didn't know that Atlas Sound was Deer Hunter at the time.
Yeah.
So I got to have one of those great moments you have as an avid listener of music when you're like, this person is also this person. What? You know?
Yeah.
I love those moments. People will one day find out my other names. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. When, like, in my illegal downloading days, there used to be websites that kind of, for me at least, mimicked the experience of going to a record store where you just like flip through and see new things and kind of try things out. And because it was all free, because it was illegal, it didn't matter. And you just like take risks and whatever. So I would find things that way, just kind of like, that's a cool album cover, I'll try that. When you were torrenting things, did you stumble across this, or had somebody told you about it?
I would do a few different things to get my music. I was subscribed to Blalock's Indie Rock Playlists. I don't know if you remember that, which became Burp. If you know Burp, B-I-R-P. That's just a guy named Josh who I met years and years and years later. But he would put like 100 tracks. He would make a playlist every month. And it would just be like 100 indie tracks, and you could torrent them. And so Deer Hunter was one of those tracks. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And then I feel like most of my music discovery was like Wikipedia, like doing like Wikipedia-ing like obscure genres, and then trying to find like people who were curating playlists, or like, you know, because for a while I was like super into Pitchfork like everybody was, but then I became like super anti-Pitchfork like a lot of people became.
Yes.
So I was always trying to like divert Pitchfork to find my cool music, you know. Because I love like disagreeing with them.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I think they really like this album though.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. It's funny how that feels like a universal experience, that like Pitchfork used to be this like the go-to place where you'd you know, really respected opinions and people who you knew you could trust, and now it's just like, fuck those guys, they don't know what they're talking about, and they give these shitty weird reviews, and they're just like contrarians, and they don't care, they just want to be like, have a different opinion to everybody else, and they shit all over like really good music.
But then again, like, just like, who reads anymore?
But like, did you listen to Deer Hunter albums after this? Because I think this,
yes,
like this is for a lot of reasons, I don't know if it's the pinnacle of their career, but it was like the height of their success. It's definitely the album that the most people listen to, and it was the album that kind of gave them some commercial success. But in a lot of ways, it's kind of an anomaly. It's not like the sound of it is different to how the rest of their catalog sounds.
For sure.
So, yeah.
I mean, it kind of gives me hope because, after that, I went through and, like, you know, listened to Microcastles and Monomania. I think Monomania hadn't come out then, but just like became a lifelong fan of Deer Hunter. And so I always hold out hope that it doesn't matter at what, like, you always might have an album like this where people like are like, whoa, it's a great artist, I'll go listen to everything. Because sometimes when you put on an album and like the album's out, you're like, all right, great, and then like a year goes by and you're like, all right, does everybody remember that? You just got to come out with more albums. You're like, hopefully, you know, more people will get to listen to that eventually.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know. I think like having an entry point that, I don't know how, I don't want to say that this is like an album that's more accessible than the rest of their stuff, because I don't think it is. They have a lot of songs on other albums that are like, you know, catchy, feel like almost pop songs, you know, stuff that could be played on the radio. But I don't know if it has something to do with, you know, Ben Allen producing this album for them. It was the first album that he'd done for them. And it's like his background, you know, he was like working with Gnarls Barkley and CeeLo Green and people like that. You know, he's worked with all different kinds of artists from all different kinds of genres and stuff. But having somebody who is like more of a mainstream kind of studio producer taking over, and I know he was butting heads with Bradford Cox the whole time, like, you know. I've seen these quotes from Bradford Cox saying like, you know, I wanted to like record the music in like, you know, the bottom of a ship, and he wanted to do it in a studio, and it was so annoying, and we just like had, you know, it was a bad experience. And I saw Rolling Stone asked him to rank his albums, and, you know, he very begrudgingly did it. And he put this album at near the bottom, was like,
wow,
very dismissive of it.
That's really funny. Yeah. I think what it like really succeeds at is just this world building you get like this whole sonic language that is really easy to like slip into and like live in. Like, you can live in this album, and like that's what some of the best. Like you've seen, I feel like we've seen a lot of albums in the past 5 years, like recently become popular that were recorded in like the 70s and the 80s, and a lot of like ambient stuff that are just getting millions of plays because they're just such good albums to live in. Right. And like people can just put that on, like they just stream really well. And like, yeah, How Can I just feel like that's, it does that really well. And I feel like it's going to stand the test of time for that, even if Rapper Cox sits on it until he's dead.
Yeah. But I think that's an interesting thing that it's like, yeah, it's this like convergence of so many different kinds of sounds. Cause you know, there's like this 60s, 70s kind of psychedelic thing in like almost a girl groupy, like Phil Spector-y sounds, but then also you can hear like similarities between like this album and Stereolab albums, or like, you know, other big bands that people recognize, but it's still definitely its own thing. So it's like people from all of these different taste groups kind of coming together in this place where all of these sounds converge. So I think that's a part of why it had such broad appeal.
Yeah. And I think it like still sticks to its guns of like being a lo-fi album, you know, like he did definitely, I'm sure he made a lot of compromises of like not recording in the bottom of the ship, but he did succeed in making it sound, you know, like shitty, like in a good way.
Yeah. But
it's,
I mean,
not polished.
Right. But like, you know, shitty, but still like friendly to the ear. Like it's not something, you know, it is in no way difficult to listen to. It's like, it's so, engaging. And it's like from the first listen, you feel like, you know, you want to come back to it, and there's so much stuff on it that just really stands out. But, yeah, like I said, I think having somebody who's like a bit more of a mainstream producer kind of pushing them a little bit more towards the center gives it a sound that's like not polished, but like has a little less fuzziness than it might normally have, even though the fuzziness is still there.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And it's funny to me that after all of that bitching about how much he hated working with Ben Allen, that they made a couple of other albums with him, and it's like, it was so annoying, but he did give us, you know, our biggest success, so I guess we'll keep doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
Yeah. I also think, like, with an album like this, it must be this kind of blessing and a curse, because it is this, you know, thing that everybody's always going to point to, no matter what other music they make and no matter what other accomplishments they have. And it's also this band that was like constantly in flux. You know, it's been like a revolving door of members. I think there's only two constant members the whole time, and then everyone else has just been not interchangeable, but people have left the band, people have died, so that has contributed to this like kind of shifting landscape. And it feels like, you know, there was this moment in time where for whatever reason all the people who were involved made this album that was like you know, something that really touched a lot of people, but again, having that burden of saying this is what people view as the pinnacle of our career. And, you know, I don't know if they care about trying to match that success, but just like having that in mind when people are listening to this album.
Yeah. Seems like he doesn't care. Or like, he definitely hasn't stopped him at all.
Yeah.
Like, I feel a much, much, much more extreme example. I was listening to Don McLean's first album, Tapestry. I think it's his first album. And it's like amazing. And you're like, oh my God, I feel so bad. Like, this is just the American Pie guy. You know, like, American Pie became such a crazy big mega hit that like 20 times more people know American Pie than the name Don McLean, you know?
Totally.
Like, but he made great other music, but like total victim of his success. You know?
Right. And it's, you know, the same kind of deal here. I mean, it's like not as tragic like, as like, you know, American Pie is like totally dominated Don McLean's life.
Right.
Just like,
at least this is like an album and not a song.
right. Absolutely. And I feel like, you know, they had an existing fan base. They built an even bigger fan base from this. And I don't think it's like dissipated. I don't think that, you know, they've released albums that haven't been successful at all, but this is kind of the one that people point to.
Yeah. It's hard. I feel like, indie bands generally, this kind of just like happens. So like people kind of put them in, you know, like the Strokes had Is This It. Everyone kind of gets one out to be fair, even though Reptilia is amazing, even though Microcastle is amazing, you know, all these other albums, but you can't make them too good.
Right.
You can't make them too good. People freak out.
Yeah. And also, I think it's funny that Ben Allen also produced Merriweather Post Pavilion for Animal Collective, which was the same deal.
Same exact deal of like an indie band, overtaken by that's so funny. Ben Allen's just like a fucking homewrecker, but like a homemaker.
right. But you know, the same kind of feeling that it's like producing this absolute monster hit, which kind of changes the character of or like the public perception of the band, and it gives them this whole new audience, and then both bands just kind of going, no, fuck that, we don't want that anymore.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but like, you know, there's something to be said for that. It's like the people who are making the music should be the ones who determine the course of their career and what their sound is. And you know, I'm thinking of like a band like MGMT that had this, you know, absolutely monster debut album, and then we're just kind of like, we're gonna make the weirdest fucking shit that is, they'll never play on the radio. And that was like, you know, probably two or three albums of that. They were just like, we totally reject that idea of being like pop stars.
I'm like, I feel like I would be like all in.
Yeah.
I've seen like everybody always goes the other way. Like, I'm like, what if we just lean into this?
Yeah.
But I guess some people do lean in and it just sucks. But I don't know. See how it goes. I feel like the instinct is to be like, now.
Yeah.
Now to success.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But I think, I mean, especially with someone like Bradford Cox, who's, you know,
a
bit of an eccentric guy and, has a little bit of a chip on his shoulder just about, you know, his public perception and about kind of playing the game of being any kind of celebrity or just being in the public eye. But at the same time, he makes amazing music. So it's like he's earned the ability to kind of, I mean, you don't have to earn the ability to make music on your own terms, but like in the midst of, you know, being some kind of celebrity, instead of saying, oh, okay, I'm just going to let Rolling Stone dictate the terms and I'm just going to do whatever they say, he does interviews with them where he's just like, ugh. Yeah, like this thing where he was ranking his albums, the first thing that they say is like, well, we noticed that you left off the band's debut album. And he's like, yeah, I just got a new Mac and I didn't really know how it worked. And so I thought I was pressing like enter, but I just sent the email and I was like, oh, well, you know, just kind of that attitude where it's like, you know, you get what you're given and I'm not going to try too hard with any of this shit because this is not what's important to me.
Yeah, that is funny.
Are you into those other bands that are kind of in the same orbit? I mean, people like Stereo.
Oh, absolutely.
Stuff,
yeah. Oh yeah, Stereo Labs, huge. Broadcast, huge. I mean, as soon as I figured out that they were like people who made like bedroom, I mean, whenever I was discovering this music, bedroom pop really wasn't a term. Mm-hmm. So it really was just like lo-fi. So I would just like look for like anything that had that tag on it. Just because I was like, well, because I realized I was like, my favorite songs are always like the demos or always like the bootlegs, the rough cut, you know, like I always love that, just like that really raw, like. And I realized that I was like, do I even like songs or am I just like really into this like sonic quality of songs, like, because it seemed like I was just like a sucker for lo-fi. And so I went down the hole, but it turns out it just happens that a lot of these songs are also just good.
Yeah.
Like divorced from their sonic qualities. But yeah, all those bands. And like Television Personalities, you know them?
No.
It's So they're actually, you talked about GMT's next album. They have, after they did that massive one, they did Congratulations.
Yeah.
And on Congratulations, there's a song called Song for Dan Tracy. And he's the lead singer of Television Personalities. And that's how I found that out. So I looked at Television Personalities. And they have an album called And Don't the Kids Just Love It? And it's like a really rough, like really British indie pop punk, like, and that got me started on like the whole, like, what are they called, C80 bands, like all those like bands that just recorded the tape basically. So I was like, oh my god, this is a whole nother wormhole to go down into. Like, yeah, I was just obsessed with tape and anything that sounded warbly and whatever.
Yeah,
it's kind of how I ended up with the music I have now.
Yeah, that label, do you mean 480? That is that, or are you talking about something else?
Something like C7C, something with a C. Some kind of, I mean, 480 is great.
Yeah. Because that, I mean, that's what this album came, what the Deer Hunter album came out on. That's just what I'm thinking about.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. No, this is like an 80s British, like, post punk tape label that, like, had a band camp. Like, someone made a band camp, put like all the releases on there, and that was like where I spent a lot of money.
Yeah, that's also another thing about, like, you know, people discovering music on the internet and people just being able to put their music on the internet. Like, I talk a lot on this show about the democratization of music making and consumption, that it's like, for a band that has any kind of niche qualities, that, you know, it's like they have a very particular audience. It used to be that it was like just grafting. You had to gig everywhere, just do shows and shows and shows all around the country just to be able to get the word out about your music. And now with sites like Bandcamp and, you know, with people torrenting music or even Spotify, you know, people being able to just discover new things that they wouldn't have necessarily been able to find before there was this explosion of online ways to find music. And I think, you know, to some extent, bands like Deer Hunter benefit from that.
Oh, totally. You
know, especially like building up to this album that, you know, obviously gave them a bit more mainstream success, but just people being able to find bands, even if it's not in a necessarily organic way, like a lot of times it's an algorithm throwing you music, but just like being able to kind of expand your musical horizons without having to work as hard. I really love that. Like, that's one of the best things about the internet to me.
Yeah, I think of them really as like a blogosphere era band. Like, the most prominent example would be like Vampire Weekend, but like, it's like a lot of bands around this time, like, really did spread through blogs and Pitchfork and things like that when there wasn't spot. You know, it's like, how did you find out what to torrent and what to illegally get? It was like pretty much word of mouth blogs.
Yeah. And that's a that comparison with Vampire Weekend as well. It's like that. I think that is, they're almost the opposite side of the coin from Deer Hunter. At least, you know, my impression.
Yes,
of them is that, like,
yes, absolutely. They are someone who leaned in.
Right, like there. It's very clear that, you know, success was very important.
What they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, exactly. They, like, they made an album, and everyone was like, "We like that." And they're like, "Okay, here's another one that sounds like it." And they're like, "Okay, we like that." Like, I'm like, "Okay, let's make it more pop," and like just keep, you know, making it popular. It's cool.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just different business models and different priorities.
Yeah, they're playing Madison Square Garden and Deer Hunter's playing Webster Hall.
Right, right.
Ooh, shade. But, just reality.
I was reading, they played Altamaro's Parties a couple of times, which is like this festival that I don't know if they're doing it anymore in the UK, that was curated. And somebody, you know, they always get a curator who's like another artist, and they decide who the bands are going to be. And usually it's at like a kind of family campground type place where there'll be like cabins that people can stay in. So it's like a whole weekend thing. You're not like staying in tents or anything, but you've got like a real place to stay. It's weird. But they played one of the Altamaro's Parties that was curated by Matt Groening, the guy who created The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't know how they chose him to be the curator. Like the other ones, it's like Portishead, Grace right. Jones, like people like that. And it's weird that it wasn't a musician, but I guess that kind
That's
of
awesome, though.
Reflects so his
chose,
taste. Yeah.
He chose Vampire Weekend or Deer Hunter?
Deer Hunter.
Oh, wow. Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
So he's for real.
yeah. And I guess that means that's that awesome. Somebody who has had a lot of mainstream success doesn't necessarily have to only be interested in mainstream things or the most mainstream things. Yeah. I feel tremendously satisfied. I feel like this has been great conversation. So thank you very much for making time for
thank
me.
You.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry I forgot what I picked as my big spark. I was like, yeah, we're going to talk about Spock, baby. Yeah. And you're like, what do you think of it? And I'm like, the Spock? What Spock? I don't know why the Halcyon Digest, I just like saw that as Heimel Gudaf of Montreal. And I was like, I can never pronounce. I'm like, Hissing Fauna, are you the destroyer? That's what I'm thinking of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, another blogosphere event. Anyway,
Anyway, I mean,
I'm glad I picked that one.
Yeah, and
I could talk about any of these albums.
These are free-form conversations. It doesn't matter. It goes all over the place every time. So it's all good. It's in keeping with what has happened before. So
nice.
yes,
cool deal,
but
man.
Thank you so much. I
thank
really
you.
It. All right, take care.
Thanks for having me. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thanks again to JW for chatting with me. His latest album, Wonder Kid, is out now. Okay, a quick spark of the day from me. I have been watching Foundation, which is Apple's big budget adaptation of Isaac Asimov's Foundation series. And when I say big budget, I mean fucking gigantic. It looks so expensive, but in a good way. It's absolutely gorgeous. The story is a little convoluted, but I'm finding it thoroughly entertaining. Basically, if you like Dune, but you thought it was a little too easy to follow, then this is the show for you. And that's about it. I am back again on Wednesday for a very exciting pre-Thanksgiving episode. So, something to look forward to. Enjoy yourself until then. Stay safe. And until next time, bye.
Greetings from Chromatica,
home of Lady Gaga,
liberator of kindness punks,
mother of little monsters,
tricon of the ages.
We are her best fans.
With a mission
to create a podcast celebrating our hero.
Broadcasting straight from Chromatica.
This podcast is about Lady Gaga, for Lady Gaga.
But anyone can listen.
It doesn't matter if you love him or capital H-I-M.
Prove your stupid love.
Ace the art pop quiz.
Put your paws up.
And download the Chromaticast wherever you get your podcasts.
Join us.
Every other Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern.
4 p.m. Pacific.
For our live tapings
at twitch.tv/ApocalypsePodcastNetwork.
Thanks for listening to the Apocalypse Podcast Network. For more great podcasts, go to ApocalypsePodcastNetwork.com. And remember, every time you support one of our sponsors, you're supporting the podcast you just heard.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.